Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to Inside China Basin, your San Francisco Giants three times a week podcast on thesportsvirus.com and now on KNBR.com, featuring Giants players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
And San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea is our regular guest, too.
Bumgarner, he's a god, isn't he? He does all these things that no other humans do.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by Townsend Restaurant and Bakery, capturing the spirit of San Francisco. Today's guest is Steve Pitker from KCBS in San Francisco. Well, Steve, the Giants have been in the same boat here, it seems like, for a long time, where they certainly don't look like a playoff team, yet they're still in this thing. They're still in the second slot right now for the wild card. And, you know, right now I'm gonna bring up the 2000 Yankees. I don't know if you're going to realize why.
But I certainly remember.
You know, yeah,
I know what you're referring to.
Yeah, they lost 15 of the last 18. I just looked it up. And then they went on one of the World Series beating the Mets.
Didn't they wind up with 87 wins that season? I mean, I remember down the stretch thinking this team is in no way prepared to play in the postseason, even if they somehow squeeze by. So it just goes to show you that in this era of eight teams winding up in the postseason, even more, what is it, 10 now, with two wild cards playing in the wild card game, anything is possible. The Giants have proven that.
Yeah, and you're right. It was an 87-win team, and they went on to win. But all that being said, does this seem like a team that can go anywhere, especially when you're looking at bullpen being a big problem and offense? I mean, how many games were like the game on Friday where they just completely shut it down and, you know, weren't able to do anything against a pitcher that you would expect they would, Edwin Jackson?
Yeah, 12 runs in their last seven games. Jackson is interesting in himself. I mean, it seemed like he was out of a major league job after he signed that huge deal, and he was with the Cubs, and he was so ineffective, and they let him go. And he's actually had some pretty good games with the Padres in the second half of this season, despite his ERA. But having said that, no, they don't look like a postseason team at all. They don't look like a team that if they get into the postseason is going to go anywhere. And yet, you just brought up the Yankees as an example of how sometimes it doesn't work that way. I mean, I guess the question, the Giants could certainly get in because the Cardinals aren't playing well, and the Mets are somehow leading the wild card, even though the majority of their great young starting rotation is on the disabled list. So I don't think any of these three teams deserves to go to the postseason, but because, you know, we not only let three division winners in, we let two wild cards play for the right to face the best team, regardless of what those records are for those wild card teams, they got a great shot to get in. If you think about it, the Dodgers are going to have locked up the division title before they come to AT&T Park next weekend. So the Dodgers don't have a lot of reason to play their regulars every game for nine innings and go with their best pitchers unless they're playing for home field advantage over the Nationals, which could happen. That could be some extra incentive other than just knocking the Giants out, which you know they'd love to do. But, I mean, I could see, like Bochy says, they're going to have to pitch and they're going to have to hit to get into the postseason. Well, maybe not.
Right.
Maybe they don't have to. Maybe a 3-5 record in their final eight games will get them in. I mean, the way the Cardinals are playing and the way the Mets are injury-riddled, it could happen. And then once that happens, I mean, you just don't know. If the Giants don't have to pitch Bumgarner that last weekend against the Dodgers, they could start him in the wild card game.
Right.
And and you can't say they're not at an advantage to advance there. And then, and I mean, if he's going up against Syndergaard, let's say, it could be a toss up. And then if they get in, I mean, the Cubs would be so heavily favored against any of these three teams. And yet, you know, as the old saying goes, that's why they play the games. I mean, the Giants could get hot.
We'll have more with Steve Pitker from KCBS Radio in San Francisco right after this. Do you want to go to the perfect restaurant and bakery before a Giants game? Why not go to the place where Matt Cain ate before he threw his perfect game? That's Townsend Restaurant and Bakery. It's true, I'm not making this up. On June the 13th, 2012, Matt Cain had a great meal at Townsend, then took the mound down the road at AT&T Park and tossed the first perfect game in Giants history. Your meal can be just as effective after you choose one of their homemade sourdough English muffins, scones, and breads. Townsend also serves cage-free Petaluma eggs. For 26 years, Townsend has been capturing the spirit of San Francisco with consistent quality from their family-run business. Serving breakfast and lunch Tuesday through Friday, 7:30 a.m. to 2 p.m., and brunch on Saturday and Sunday from 8 a.m. to 2:30 p.m., Townsend is located right along the Embarcadero at 2 Townsend Street in San Francisco. Eat at Townsend Restaurant and Bakery, and who knows, perhaps you can be perfect that day too. You mentioned the Mets and the injuries and how surprising it would be that they would be one of the wild card teams. And it kind of says something about the whole system, I guess. But what about the Dodgers? You know, the last time you and I talked, we were talking about how the Dodgers rotation really didn't look good enough for them to win the division. And then they just had players step up. I mean, I guess that's what it takes to get into a postseason, just unknown pitchers, Arias or Stewart or just whoever it was, seemed to give them enough innings.
I know. It's amazing how that turned out. I mean, Stewart is – you realize Stewart and Toles, the young left-handed hitter who was out of baseball last season dealing with an anxiety disorder, both of those guys started this season in the Class A California League.
It's hard to believe.
Then they went up to Double A and then Triple A and the majors. I mean, it's so rare that you see one guy on a team do that in any season, and you got two guys on the same team doing it. And both contributing. And Stewart, you know, had phenomenal numbers in the minor leagues. But Maeda's been the one steady. You know, he's been good all season long. Now suddenly you've got Kershaw back. And you've also got you've got Jose De Leon, who he and Arias are the two top prospects for the Dodgers. Those two guys are the reasons that they haven't been able to acquire the big-name starting pitcher that they've been hoping to acquire, because every team wants those guys, or they want Corey Seager. And now the Dodgers are finally reaping the benefits of having those two guys both in the major leagues helping that team down the stretch. So, you throw those guys in there, and then Rich Hill, of course, now healthy and contributing, and suddenly the Dodgers' rotation looks very, very good heading into the postseason.
I've got to go with Corey Seager as Rookie of the Year, and I've got to go with Dave Roberts as Manager of the Year, even though Joe Maddon, of course, did a great job. They're going to win over 100 games in Chicago, but the adversity that Dave Roberts faced was pretty amazing, I thought.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. I mean, it's hard to argue with any writer who votes for Maddon, because the Cubs, as you say, are going to win over 100. They might win 105, and they're the odds-on favorite to win the World Series. But you can have the best players, and you can have, you can have the best overall talent, statistically speaking. But he does so much more, and I think everybody in baseball knows that. To create this great chemistry on a team, this great harmony, the guys love playing for him, just like the guys in Tampa Bay did. So, any vote for Maddon, I wouldn't argue with. But at the same time, I agree with you that any vote for Dave Roberts, I wouldn't argue with at all. They've had a record number of players on the disabled list this season for a Dodger team. And it's just kind of like the A's. The A's do too, except the A's are in last place and the Dodgers are in first. So, yeah, especially first-year manager, Roberts has done a phenomenal job. And anybody who's ever played with Dave Roberts or interviewed Dave Roberts knows what a class act he is. It's good to see that.
More with Steve Bitker in just a moment. Last year, I was riding my bicycle in Marin when suddenly... flat tire. Thankfully, someone recommended I get my repair done at Breaking Away Bikes in Ross. While head mechanic and bike guru Rich quickly fixed my tire, I noticed the wide selection of bikes in the store. Breaking Away Bikes rents, demos, and sells all the bikes you could possibly need. Road bike? Check. Mountain bike? That was my choice, and I'm so glad I decided to buy it at Breaking Away Bikes, located in the heart of Ross, at 7 Ross Common. Catch them on your way to ride Alpine, West Marin, and Petaluma, or call 415-461-2959 for Breaking Away Bikes. One more thing about the Dodgers. Friday night, it was Vin Scully night, and a nice tribute there at Dodger Stadium, and he spoke to everybody, and it's just amazing how here he is, he's 88 years old, and he still sounds really good. Maybe he's lost a little bit off his fastball, but, it's almost like you'd never want him to retire, ever, because he just wanted to keep going because he's so good, and even into the postseason where he made that decision that he's going to finish it up at AT&T Park on Sunday, next Sunday, October the 2nd. You know, what do you think about that? Do you think that maybe he should have kept going there, or is this a good decision?
I think he did that so that there would be a known finality in advance,
right,
as to what his final game would be. Because if he says he's going to announce all postseason games or some postseason games, you know, then you never know when his last game is going to be until it's suddenly his last game. So it kind of made sense in that regard. Obviously, we're never going to see anybody like Vince Scully again with that longevity with one team. For so long, he was the greatest baseball announcer ever, and historically speaking, still is. As you say, he's lost a little off his fastball. The voice thins out. You know, it's a long season, even given the number of games that he's still working. But geez, I hope I have a fastball like he has when I'm 88, for God's sake. The people that are really hurting are my best friend from college, Dana, L.A. native, and still lives down in Southern California, and he's just really, really struggling to deal with the reality that Vinny's not going to be around next season. And for him, we've talked about this before, he doesn't think Vinny's lost a thing off that fastball because, you know, he's listened to Vinny game after game after game every year since he was born. And for him, you know, when you're with him every day like that, you don't necessarily see the dip. And so I think Vinny's getting out at a great time. And I mean, when I was a kid, and we're talking a long time ago, Joe, I would listen, you know, I'd go to bed listening to ball games on the radio. And if the Giants weren't on, this was before the A's moved west, you know, I'd tune in KFI and listen to the Dodgers. And it was magical for me as even a young Giants fan. Developing a healthy distaste for the rival Dodgers. I love listening to Vinny call games. It was just really, really cool.
Yeah, and you've done baseball play-by-play. You did some of the Oakland A's, and you know how hard it is sometimes. They tell you to not start a story with two outs, but it seems like Vin Scully, he just knows exactly how to get his story in. He's got a plan A, plan B, plan C, I would guess, because you know one is more concise than the other as far as his stories, but it's just so well orchestrated the way he goes about a broadcast. And I don't know that anybody, like you said, there'll never be another Vin Scully. I don't know that anybody can even come close to doing it the way that he does it.
Yeah. One of the things among many things that I've always loved about listening to Vin is at the peak of a pennant race, when you get down to the last day or two, and he will do the play-by-play of the Dodgers and he will intersperse play-by-play of, let's say, the Giants, if they're battling the Dodgers for first place.
Right.
Just monitoring what the Giants are doing in some other ballpark and against some other team. You know, he'll say 2-2 fastball is outside to Yasiel Puig. Meantime, in St. Louis, Brandon Crawford has just lined a single to center. I mean, he's so good at that, and he still is so good at that. He can still do that. It just comes naturally for him.
Yeah, and I love the imitation that John Miller does. And so many, I was talking about this with John Shea the other day, so many announcers try to emulate him. I was walking into a booth one time, I was walking by another minor league announcer's booth, and he's going, pull up a chair, a pleasant good evening to you wherever you may be. And I was like, wait a minute.
Farmer John Wiener.
Farmer John. And I was like, wait a minute, you can't do that. I mean, that's Vin Scully. You can't act exactly like Vin Scully, you know?
Oh, so he was. That was his play-by-play.
That was his play. Yeah, that was his opening to his broadcast.
You know what? Years ago, when Hideo Nomo threw that incredible no-hitter at Coors Field against the Rockies, I was either listening to it live, maybe on ESPN radio, or I caught the replay later on of the ninth inning. And he, I swear, he said, 2-2 the count to Andres Galarraga. You know, and it was like two and two the count to Harvey Keene when Sandy So he was, I don't think he was trying to copy him, but he had been around Vinny so much that he was just doing it naturally. So yeah, I think those were of all the great moments listening to him, those were my favorite moments when he would weave the play by play of another game mixed in with the Dodger play-by-play. Jeez, nobody can do it like that.
One of the things,
and of course, John Miller doing Vinny in Japanese.
That is the best.
Yeah,
that is the best. And there's just certain names, too. I remember when Daryl Strawberry played for the Dodgers, he would say, Daryl Strawberry, you know, just the way he would draw it out. It was pretty cool.
Ken Korak does a great Vin Scully impersonation. I tried to get Kenny when I was working for the A's to do it on the air, but he either wouldn't do it or he would only do it on a rare occasion. He just didn't think he was worthy enough to do it.
Right.
But he really does it well.
We'll get back to the conversation with Steve Bitker from KCBS right after this. Hey, Giants fans, whether you're taking pictures of Little Leaguers or the pros, Tamron Lenses and Looking Glass Photo have the perfect lens for you. The award-winning Tamron 16-300mm all-in-one zoom is more versatile than your basic kit lens. With amazing Tamron quality and image stabilization, you'll never need to switch lenses again, whether they are sliding into home or making a spectacular catch at the wall. Your Tamron lens will catch them all. Tamron has lenses for all of your photographic needs, and you can get your Tamron lens at Looking Glass Photo in Berkeley. Contact them at www.lookingglassphoto.com. Getting back to the Giants and down the stretch here, you know, we've talked ad nauseum on this podcast about the closer position, but it's ever changing. And now it's back to Sergio Romo. We've come full circle. We're back to 2012, and he made it look easy, that game against the Dodgers where he just closed it out. So if you're Bruce Bochy, is he your closer now for the last week of the season?
Yeah, I think, you know, we may have talked about this a week ago, 10 days ago. I know I had said on the air that, you know, maybe it's time to go back to Romo, because the one thing, now Romo may not have the stuff, he certainly doesn't throw the heater that a lot of these young Giant relievers throw, but he's a veteran, and he's not going to get rattled in a ninth inning save situation, and that's one great thing about him, and he's got the guts of a burglar. So I thought it was time to go back to Romo, and I was glad to see him do that, and it was glad to see Romo succeed. In fact, he went to Romo in a closing situation just a day or two before, but then he yanked him. You remember he got one out, then gave up a single, and then he pulled him and brought in Casilla and the whole thing.
I remember, you know, that, yeah.
I mean, that was when Sergio was smiling in disbelief. He left the mound and went into the dugout. He was like, oh, my God, you've got to be kidding me. And, no, I think that's the direction to go in. And I mean, it's just been crazy because in a lot of games, these relievers have done well in the seventh and eighth innings. But it's just, you know, so much of this game is mental, and the pressure is really on in the ninth inning.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that's what it seems like. You're right about the mental part, not just for the pitchers, but for the hitters too. It just seems like they've been grinding. You know, there's so many guys that have been struggling in the second half of the year. I don't know that they can just snap out of it. It's kind of in their heads, right?
Well, it is. And, you know, even you look at their two aces, Bumgarner and Cueto, their numbers in the second half are not as good as their numbers were in the first half. So, you know, it's been a struggle from top to bottom. Again, back to the original point, you know, they're not playing like a playoff team. They haven't played like a playoff team since before the All-Star break, and yet miraculously they're still in this thing because no other second-place team has excelled either. And so, you know, it's three teams fighting to see who can get eliminated first. That's how I see it.
Yeah. And then to finish up, and I don't know if you saw the story there by, I think it was John Heyman, saying Bobby Evans, you know, was second-guessing himself a little bit. And that makes me think, you know, if you're a GM going into the offseason, now what do you do? You know, do you shake it up? I mean, really, you kind of have a set lineup. It didn't work out, you know, if you don't make the postseason and if you don't win the World Series, as it stands right now, doesn't look like it. So do you shake it up? Is there one move that you make, Steve, that really does shake things up for this team for next year?
Great question. You know, two-part answer. In a way, they'd be better off just not making it, because if they make it, win the wild card game and get swept by the Cubs, I mean, is it any better?
Right, and do you make that move? Do you trade somebody like Joe Panik or Brandon Belt or somebody?
Yeah, I don't know. I think Bobby's just too honest a guy, and I mean, I don't know that he honestly thinks he's a knucklehead for not acquiring the closer. I don't think that's true, but it's like he said when he explained, you know, he was close to getting Melanson. He was offering a couple of good prospects, just like the Nationals were.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, the Pirates went with the Nationals. So naturally, Bobby kind of looks back and thinks, well, maybe if I had just offered a mid-range prospect in addition, you know, off the San Jose roster or something, maybe he could have done it. But, you know, we all second-guess ourselves when things don't materialize as we were hoping they would. So I think he's a great guy. And he's done a solid job, and it's not his fault that the guys in the ninth inning have been so collectively bad in the second half of the season. It's not his fault they've had they've had key injuries to the rotation, and it's not his fault that the hitters haven't produced at all in the second half like they did in the first half. So, but you know, back to your original question, right now, as things stand, they're entering next season with no proven closer. Unless you look at Casilla, based on his track record over several years, as being the guy, and I don't think they're looking at it that way. So, you know, they've got to look at the budget and see if they can make an honest effort to go after an Andrew Miller, or I think Miller may be under contract still from his days with the Yankees. I think he is. But let's say, you know, an Aroldis Chapman, although I don't think the Cubs are going to let the Giants or anybody else outbid them.
No.
Given what they've got right now. But you know, there are other guys out there. Or are they just going to think, hey, you know, unless we can pull off something without giving away a key member of the team, they may look at the idea of just going into spring training and seeing what happens, because they do have a lot of good young arms. They do have a lot of guys who throw gas. And, you know, it stands to reason that one or two of them, you know, may shine enough to be a point of the closer. I keep waiting for Hunter Strickland to be that guy, but it just hasn't happened yet.
Has not happened. All right, Steve. Well, I look forward to seeing you at a postseason game.
Absolutely. Joe, it's been my pleasure, and I always enjoy talking to you.
That's Steve Bitker from KCBS in San Francisco. Coming up on Tuesday, we'll be at AT&T Park in San Francisco, the final week of the regular season, the Giants and the Colorado Rockies. So join us then. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on thesportsvirus.com and now on KNBR.com.